Today I'll be talking to you about our tool Phi. This work was done in collaboration with Ben Munch, Somesh Jha, and Tom Ristenpart, all at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So in a nutshell, Phi is a symbolic execution tool that's specifically built for finding bugs that occur in the firmware of embedded devices, such as memory safety violations and the misuse of peripherals. It's designed to meet the challenging aspects of firmware, many of which violate the assumptions of traditional symbolic execution. But it's also designed to take advantage of some unique opportunities in the firmware space. In many cases, Phi can verify the absence of bugs we are looking for, which is a capability outside the scope of traditional symbolic execution. So we evaluated Phi on a corpus of 99 programs, and we found that it was effective both for finding verification and for finding bugs. And this is important because it turns out that these bugs can often lead to vulnerabilities. So as an example, let's look at this attack from Woot last year due to Frisbee et al. This attack focuses on an Intuit Go payment point of sale device. And if you're not familiar with this device, basically it connects to a smartphone via the audio jack. And when a user swipes their credit card, it will encrypt the card data and send it using a key on the device, and it will send it to the smartphone for processing via a bank. Now, it's important to note here that the card is considered to be untrusted. That the phone is considered to be untrusted by the device. And so the device should only ever send encrypted data over the wire, and the phone should never see the unencrypted data. However, what Frisbee et al. Showed is that a misbehaving app can send a malicious command to the device, which will cause it to just totally spill the secret key. And this completely compromises the security of the entire scheme. So if you look a little bit more closely at what's going on here inside the device, you'll see that it's running an MSP430 microcontroller. This is just a very simple microcontroller. It's a 16-bit device. And it runs firmware that's written in C and operates at a very low level of interaction with the hardware. So this is code written in C, so surprise, surprise, it's a buffer overflow in the firmware. And it turns out that there's actually a lot of attacks on embedded systems. Many proof-of-concept attacks have been shown to exploit vulnerabilities in a variety of deployed devices, some of which are in really serious scenarios, like implantable heart devices and pin pads. But despite the large number of attacks using vulnerabilities that kind of seem preventable in hindsight and are the vulnerabilities are oftentimes very simple, there's been very little work on actually detecting these vulnerabilities a priori. And so we kind of thought to ourselves, you know, source code analysis has been so helpful on the desktop in, at the very least, increasing security somewhat and reducing these vulnerabilities. Maybe we could use some of these techniques in the firmware space. So it's kind of fun to think about all of the different design points here, different types of source code analyses and their pluses and minuses. And the one that we felt was best was symbolic execution. So just as a brief refresher, this is a technique that allows inputs to the program to be expressed as a set of constraints. And as the program is run by the executor, copies of the program state are forked off along each encountered branch that satisfies these constraints, allowing multiple program paths to be searched for bugs. And a big advantage of symbolic execution is that when a bug is encountered, the analyst can get example input values and a program trace that exercises this bug. So a popular mature tool for symbolic execution is CLI. And it's a really great tool. It operates on LLVM bit code, which is derived from the Clang compiler from the C source. And it's seen a lot of success. It has, on average, very high line coverage, and it's pretty good at finding memory safety violations. So we thought to ourselves, well, maybe we could use CLI for MSP430. It's a good target because it's very popular and it's very widely deployed in a number of settings, including a lot of security applications, and it has support for Clang. You can apply MSP430 code to Clang, and you can get LLVM bit code out. It turns out it's not quite that simple. There are some assumptions about being on a 32-bit or a 64-bit x86 in CLI. So our first step was just to port CLI to 16 bits, and then we evaluated our corpus. And this comes from a variety of different sources, including the TI community portal, a whole bunch from GitHub, And then we actually had some more kind of production level code represented by an implementation of the USB stack for MSP430. And we also threw in a synthetic example, a card reader written by the second author of this paper before we began our work on Phi, just to see how that would work. And what we found is that the instruction coverage is just terrible. It's under 6% on average. And for most programs, it doesn't even get to 1% before it hits so many false positives that it can't continue and it just dies. So let's look at why this code is so challenging using a toy example. So recall that the firmware operates at a very low level of abstraction. To interact with the environment, the device uses I/O ports, like this P1N, for example. And these correspond to particular peripherals, like pins on the device, that are connected to the outside world. And these code constructs are just macros that are defined to be offsets into memory, where the peripherals mapped. So to a naive symbolic execution, this just looks like sheer madness. It just looks like a read from uninitialized memory. And further, the actual location where the peripherals are mapped in memory depends on the chip. And with over 400 variants of the MSP430, it's not satisfactory to just hard code these addresses into the execution itself. And so we consider this just diversity within the architecture to be one of the big challenges. Additionally, even if you knew sort of, you know, where which peripheral or where you were reading from memory, it's not entirely clear what value you should return. You know, this is definitely controlled by the environment, so it sort of makes sense that you would want it to be symbolic, but this might be mapped to some sort of external device which is not known at analysis time. It may not even be known until deployment time. And the semantics of these devices can be complicated and oftentimes break the assumptions of traditional symbolic execution. So if you look at these two if statements here, they seem to be mutually exclusive. The first one, 0x20, has to be true, and on the second one, it has to be false. So a naive symbolic execution would not be able to execute both of them. But in fact, what's going on here is that you're reading from hardware, and so, you know, you could definitely get two different values. So we consider modeling the peripherals and the semantics thereof to be another challenge of this work. Finally, direct your attention to this port 2 ISR right here. This is an interrupt. Basically what happens is that this code will be invoked whenever, in this case, input comes in off of the port 2. And this BISSR register enables this interrupt. So at any point after BISSR is properly configured, you can get an implicit control transfer into this code. And again, if you don't know about this, and why would a naive symbolic execution, you're going to miss a lot of interesting behaviors. And it's another challenge of the space, because a lot of these programs are interrupt driven. Okay, so since existing tools perform pretty poorly in this space, we built Phi. It handles many variants of the MSP430. It can check the misuse of peripherals and memory safety, and it can verify the absence of bugs in many cases. It's also highly customizable via a modular platform. And particular components of this modular platform deal with the challenges I mentioned earlier. The challenge of architecture diversity is handled by this chip layout specification. Peripheral semantics are handled by the memory library, and the interrupt spec takes care of the interrupt-driven programs. And we also found that, you know, there was actually some unique opportunities here. So we made changes to the core symbolic execution engine to allow it to verify programs in many cases. So let's go through this modular architecture, starting with the chip layout and how it handles architecture diversity. So in order for an analysis to work properly, it has to deal with these variations in the layout and capability of the microcontroller itself. And you know, these are things like the overall size of the memory, the various regions of memory and what their types are, such as, you know, these I/O ports or flash memory, RAM, all these things, and what interrupts are actually available on the device. So the chip layout spec handles all of these. We wrote a small domain-specific specification language that makes it so that you can just very easily write a flat text file, which is, you know, pretty easy to manipulate, and makes it so you can create a new chip layout pretty easily. But there's over 400 of these things, so doing that manually would be a pretty big pain. So we also wrote some scripts so that you can automatically generate a new layout specification from headers within the MSP430 GCC compiler. And so this is how we get to that huge number of chips that we can handle, because basically if MSP430 GCC can compile it, we can handle it. All right, so now let's look at how PHY deals with memory. We'll go back to our example program. When the executor reaches this 0x20 dereference, it'll check the chip layout spec, and it'll see that this corresponds to a peripheral, P1N. It will then use that to index into the memory library, where there's a specific function, P1Read. We have functions for reads and for writes for each peripheral that you could encounter. So we get to this P1Read, but then there's a question of, you know, what should we actually do? What should we return? Again, we don't even know what this thing is connected to. So we made the conservative and very generous assumption to the attacker that the attacker controls all of the peripherals. And what this means is that P1Read will just return a fresh, unconstrained symbolic value every time it's invoked. And you can see how this will avoid that, that if statement problem that I mentioned earlier. On the first read, you'll get a symbol delta 1. On the second read, a new symbol delta 2. And on the third read, delta 3. And each of these can be constrained as you go along. But since delta 1 and delta 3 are independent, you can get to this string copy, which, by the way, is actually a vulnerability in this sample program, because this delta 2 is controlled by the attacker, and it's allowing, you know, this sort of unbounded string copy. All right, so let's see. Oh, right. So another important part of the system is that the user can actually supply custom memory libraries. You don't have to rely on our memory library. And this is nice because, you know, maybe you're not as generous as me, and maybe you want a more constrained model of the attacker. Maybe you know the exact peripherals that are going to be attached to your device, and you don't want to make our assumptions that it could just return anything. And in fact, we actually exploited the flexibility of the memory library to create a simple fuzzer that just returns a random value instead of a symbolic value. So now let's see how PHY handles interrupts. So much like with the memory, you'll reference into the chip layout specification at each instruction, and you'll see which interrupts are available for the device. And then you'll index into the interrupt library for each interrupt which is available on the device, and the interrupt library will answer some questions. So for one, are interrupts enabled at this point? And secondly, does this interrupt have priority? So interrupts are ordered by an entire hierarchy, so you can't execute a low priority interrupt when you're in a high priority interrupt. And these details are handled by the interrupt library. So for the first part of the program, this is definitely, there are no interrupts enabled because we haven't enabled them. But after that point, there's a question of where should you actually allow interrupts to occur? And we're going to use the same assumption from before, the same powerful adversary that controls where interrupts can happen at any point it wants. So in order to be safe here, what we're actually going to do is we're going to split the execution state at each instruction where interrupts are enabled, and we'll allow one path to go into the interrupt and one to continue along, not in the interrupt. All right. So at this point, I've shown you how the modular architecture of PHY takes care of the challenges of firmware. Now I'll show you how we take advantage of the domain for verification. So it's kind of worth noting here that trying to verify programs this way is kind of a crazy idea, because it requires accounting for every possible execution state. And the state space, at least for desktop applications, is intractably large. But our key insight here is that the state space for firmwares is much smaller and can oftentimes be tractable. So let's go through our sample application and see how this works. Now, it might surprise you that the state space seems tractable here, because it's very common for firmware to have infinite loops in them. I mean, even this simple example program does. And this is because firmware is usually always on, waiting for some input to occur via the external environment, which it will handle, do some processing on, and then return to sitting in its loop, again, waiting for some input. So there are infinite program paths here. But it's important to see that, you know, execution's going to keep going, but it's stuck executing states that it's already seen before. That is to say, the memory is in a configuration that it's already visited. And this prevents verification because you're spinning in this loop forever. So we took kind of the natural brute force solution to this by just logging every execution state that we see as we go along doing symbolic execution. And doing this enables some optimizations that would largely not otherwise be possible. The first optimization that we perform is called pruning. The key idea here is that we'll detect when we're about to execute two states that are redundant, that is to say, have identical state spaces, or that have identical configurations, state configurations. And if we're about to execute a redundant state, we'll just terminate it, and we won't execute any further along that branch. And this allows us to terminate these infinite loops in the analysis. And this relies on a second key observation, which is that once you've visited a completely redundant state, all of the successors to that state will also be redundant. So executing those, again, won't get you to anything new. The second optimization that we do is that we'll detect when a memory object is frequently changing, and we'll replace it with a symbolic over-approximation. It's important to note that this technique is complete because you're always just over-approximating a state. So in other words, you're never going to miss a bug in the program, although you may report some paths which are not actually feasible because you replace this concrete value with a symbolic one. So we actually find that although this false positive possibility could occur in theory, in practice we very rarely see it. So there are a lot of details about how all of these analyses, about how these optimizations work and how we make them efficient, but you know, for lack of time, I'm just going to refer you to the paper where we have full details on all of that. Okay. So I've explained how Phi handles the challenges of architecture diversity and the challenges of peripheral semantics and of interrupts using our modular platform. I've also described how modifications to the core symbolic execution engine help us to often verify programs even in the presence of non-terminating loops. So now let's see how well it works in practice. So as Kevin mentioned, we used Amazon EC2, and we made some automated scripts, which I thought worked really well, and they do. But you know, we're running 100 instances of EC2 at the same time. We run our tests for 50 minutes. Why 50 minutes? Well, it does cost a lot of money, and when you get to a full hour, they might charge you for 2 hours if you go a little bit over it. So we stay at 50 minutes. We've actually found in our testing that if you continue to execute for significantly longer, you don't get much more of state space exploration over the first hour, at least not for you know, sort of a reasonable amount of time. So we executed several different versions of Phi. The first one is just that 16-bit port of CLI, which we consider to be the baseline for our experiments. Executing this version is how we got to those results earlier that you know, CLI gets less than 6% on average. We also did the sort of vanilla version of Phi, which is the symbolic execution engine plus the default plugin. And then we also have a version where we added in the pruning optimization and one where we added in both the pruning and smudging optimizations. Okay, so we applied this to our corpus of 99 programs from all of these different sources. And we found some bugs, 22 actually, across the corpus using the smudging version. We verified that these were real bugs manually. And most of the bugs that we found were in this MSP430 USB protocol stack. So most of the bugs that we found were in production code. We also found one bug that misused Flash. So I did mention that we can check to make sure that peripherals are being used properly, and we did find one case where they were not. So responsible disclosure, we emailed the developers about this. I actually checked this morning on the MSP430 USB code, and it looks like these attacks were largely mitigated. In terms of coverage, coverage does improve as we ratchet up our optimizations. You can see a very low level at baseline, and we get pretty good as we get all the way up to smudging, almost up to 80%. You can see here that we only have one false positive due to smudging, which is a little bit surprising considering that we're aggressively expanding concrete input to symbolic. And you can see that the verification results improved as well as we ratcheted up the optimizations. Okay, so one reason why we do so well is because a lot of firmware out there is actually pretty simple. And this is still valuable to verify these programs, but we may need a slightly different approach for larger programs. So if we actually give up this goal of verification, we can improve the performance quite a bit. So we actually implemented a different interrupt model. And again, this was very simple via our modular architecture. We just took out the interrupt spec that does interrupts everywhere where they're possible and just made it so that they do interrupts where you're at a basic block boundary. And this seems to capture most of the interesting cases, and it also boosts our instruction coverage quite a bit. Okay. So there's a lot of future work to do here. I will note that PHY is kind of new in this space. We don't know of any other symbolic execution, certainly, that works for firmware, and we know of certainly no open source analyses for this space. But it's just one point in the set of possible design spaces. You know, there's all of these different testing techniques. I think it would be interesting to explore all of them either on their own or perhaps some sort of hybrid combination of this. One of the big challenges with PHY was that you spend a lot of time executing interrupts, and although you're going down different paths and you're exploring unique state, oftentimes that state isn't really very interesting. And so maybe some static analysis could be used to kind of cut down on that. And there's also some interesting ideas, I think, with using language design, where instead of making everybody write these programs in C, you could use something that was maybe a little bit safer. Okay, so that's about it. In summary, we initiated work for using MSP430 automated bug finding. We have a modular, conservative symbolic execution system. We do both verification and bug finding, and we scale up to large programs and handle small programs very well. Finally, I will note that our code is also open source, and you can download it from my personal website address. That's it. Thanks for listening.
I apologize for calling it PHY.
Oh, yes, PHY on firmware.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, whoa. Run to the mic. Okay. Please state your name and affiliation.
Frank Imason, University of Waterloo. Do you have any plans or think it's worthwhile to implement the ability to program how external peripherals would act to reduce the symbolic, to do the space?
Okay, I'm sorry, maybe I didn't make that very clear. We actually do that. You can swap out the memory library. So the default memory library is very over-approximate, but you could encode whatever semantics of the peripherals you want using a custom memory library for that part of the peripherals.
Sorry, I meant external peripherals, so like, say, an external memory unit or...
Those are connected via, like, I/O ports or mapped into memory or whatever. So since we handle those specific locations, you can just encode that into your memory library. It'd definitely be complicated, but the entire execution state is passed into the memory library when it says, like, oh, you know, what do I do about this read at P1? So you know, maybe your memory library says, oh, I'm going to look at the execution state, I'm going to see what's already happened, and implement external peripherals that way.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, this is Indranil Banerjee from Qualcomm. Awesome work.
Thank you.
I was wondering, when you mentioned, at some point when explaining pruning, you mentioned that redundant states will always lead to redundant successors.
Uh-huh.
Is that a necessary condition, or is that a heuristic you're using?
So I am very grateful that you asked this question, because I think it's a little bit confusing myself and perhaps a bit counterintuitive. So if you think about a deterministic machine, then it should be pretty obvious that two redundant states are going to have redundant successors.
Yes.
So maybe what you're thinking of is, what about non-determinism or
about
something
the
like that?
Peripheral semantics, shouldn't that?
Yeah. So the fact that our memory library is stateless kind of at least deals with the fact that you're not going to have to deal with state. But the main thing is, because we completely address all of symbolic memory, like every place where you have non-determinism is covered by symbolic memory. So since that's such an over-approximation, when you hit two locations, any non-determinism is going to have the same symbolic value. So it actually makes the machine deterministic. You'll explore every path on the first redundant state.
Oh, you're capturing all the non-determinism in your state configuration.
I think so. I mean, I guess there is some question about whether we do this properly. I would say that because our memory library is so simple, and we just make this, you know, very generous assumption that the attacker has complete control over peripherals, I think it's probably the case that that is true.
All right. Thanks.
Jethro Beekman, UC Berkeley. Great work, and thanks for making it open source. How much work would it be to port this to non-MSP 430 architectures?
That's a really good question. So that's something I've thought about a little bit too. You know, we took a lot of advantage of MSP 430 specific features, and so I am not sure that I'm really qualified to answer that for something like ARM or like a much more complicated instruction set, as well as all those other features. I think the basic techniques are sound, but I do think that it would be a fair amount of work probably to do that.
Thanks.
Is it related to the complexity, like an Atmel? I mean,
yeah, definitely. I mean, you do have
similar complexity level.
Yeah, I mean, probably something that's at a low level of complexity would be pretty easy. You would have to potentially have other parts of the plugin that could deal with other features of the device.
Hey, I'm Jan Shurteshvili from UC Santa Barbara. I just had a look at your website, and how soon is coming soon?
Very soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Let's thank Drew.